I'll just dive right in if you're cool with that.
That's right, Russell. Fine. Thank you.
Okay. Sir, let's talk a little bit about the data, the numbers. And you issued a statement, you've issued several, but about how we're getting our statistics, whether they're consistent across the country. It's got to be nightmarish to try to sort it out. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what can people trust when they hear all these numbers flying around?
Well, Russell, I think people can have confidence in the numbers that we generate at CDC and that the White House Task Force generates. I mean, we have a significant outbreak in this country. We're pushing 4 million, almost 400,000 cases in the country. We have close to 149,000 deaths so far. We're currently averaging somewhere between 50 and 70,000 new cases a day, as well as we're up around 1,000 new deaths a day. And I think we have pretty good numbers tracking. The big issue is to know what's happening in your own community. Obviously, Oklahoma right now is having significant increase in the number of cases that are occurring in Oklahoma, as I think you and your listeners are aware.
Absolutely. And can you just real quickly, for folks who don't understand and all the alphabet soup of Washington and in your case of Georgia, what is the CDC? What is the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, briefly?
Yeah, I appreciate it, Russell. Well, CDC is really the premier public health institution in the world. It's, more than 20,000 individuals who are dedicated 24/7 to improving the human condition by focusing on the public health challenges of our nation. Obviously, the COVID pandemic is front and center right now, but we work hard on other infectious diseases, trying to bring an end to the HIV in America, working on substance abuse disorder and trying to reduce overdose deaths, working on maternal child mortality, obesity, diabetes, working hard to try to prevent from misusing nicotine products. So it's a comprehensive public health team that really works, as I said, 24/7 to really try to improve the human condition and the public health of this nation.
And all of that work ongoing while you're dealing with the pandemic, right? So what is the number one goal? What is the CDC's aim in dealing with the coronavirus breakout?
Well, we want to get this pandemic, obviously, under control. First and foremost, we want to protect the vulnerable and prevent death. And we've made a marked improvement in that. You know, in March, we were losing close to 2,500 sick lives a day in this nation. Still, obviously, too many. As I said, we're averaging close to around 1,000 deaths now. We have over 1,100 in the last 24 hours. But really protecting the vulnerable is really the first. Secondly, is to contain the transmission of this virus. And this is why I try to remind the American public we're not defenseless. We have one of the most powerful weapons that you could have against this virus. It's really just a simple face mask. And if we all wore that simple face mask combined with being smart about how we get involved in gatherings and we wash our hands, that we could actually bring this outbreak under control. But for us to do that, we don't need 50% of us to do that. We need all of us to do that. So I call on all Americans to do their part, to be part of the fight. As John Kennedy said, don't ask what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. What I'm asking you to do and to be part of the solution, if we all unite, wear our face coverings when we can't social distance more than 6 feet, that we wash our hands, we're smart about crowds, we decide to, postpone and close bars, or at least limit them to outside. Same with restaurants, and avoid crowded restaurants. Those four simple things really can get this outbreak under control as we move forward to open our schools and get kids back into the education that they need. It's really in their overall public health interest to have these schools open, obviously get our economy back running and move forward as we await the fruits of innovation, which are coming, which are really the scientific community providing us a safe and efficacious COVID virus vaccine. It's been a great week this week. Two phase three trials actually began. So it's still within the sights that we could actually have a safe and efficacious vaccine. To add to that important thing of wearing a face mask, social distancing, washing your hands, avoiding crowded areas, we could really have that in our armamentarium too before the end of this year.
Sir, I'm going to be super honest with you. I've been telling folks since, I don't know, March roughly, that face masks are effective, that they do help prevent the spread. And boy, do I get a lot of pushback. And a lot of people point me at CDC statements saying, look, CDC says masks don't work or they're ineffective. I think that the science has advanced perhaps since a few months ago, and that the CDC's messaging now seems to be very consistent. But are you struggling with, you know, some of the changes that have come down as far as recommendations, not only from the CDC, but from National Institutes of Health, et cetera?
Yeah, Russell, I think, you raise a very important point. You know, I was Jesuit educated, and one of the things I studied was Aristotle. And one of the things Aristotle said that you could really put anything on a blank slate. I mean, the public will buy it if it's a blank slate. But if you have to erase that slate, and in his time, you really had to sand it down and put a second message on there and try to get them to refocus, it's very complicated. Clearly, when we were originally looking at masks, we were looking at it and understanding this disease as assuming that it was a symptomatic illness, similar to flu, and that we recommended mask wearing for those people that were symptoms. We wanted them to stay home and wear a mask. But we didn't really understand and appreciate at that time how much of this viral infection is actually asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic. Once we understood that, then we understood that really face coverings had a critical role to be what we call source control. So I wear my mask to protect you. You wear your mask to protect me. And we have really good solid scientific data to show what happens to droplet transmission, a variety of viral pathogens, including the coronaviruses, including SARS, including the current COVID-19, that a simple face covering really does have a substantial impact on the ability of these droplets to transmit. And again, as I said, as you pointed out, we now have more data in observational data. For example, hairdressers that we recently reported in MMWR, two of them were infected, one for 8 days, one for 4 days. They had 139 clients combined. They wore a mask while they did the hair work for anywhere from 15 to 45 minutes. Most of the clients also wore a mask, and nobody got infected. We have similar data in our household transmission. So mask work and trying to get that slate rewritten so the American public knows. As I said, it's the most powerful weapon we have. If all of us embrace mask wearing right now, that we would bring in over the next 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, we would actually bring this virus under substantial control and then reassure the opportunity to reopen our schools, keep our businesses open. For those of you who like sports, get sports back. But I need the entire American public now to embrace mask as the powerful weapon that it is.
You're listening to Oklahoma Perspective. I'm KRMG's Russell Mills. We're on with Dr. Robert Redfield. He is current director of the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, or the CDC. I know that we're getting short on time. Let me ask you about, you know, hydroxychloroquine, remdesivir. We're hearing a lot of talk about, you know, medications. Some are claiming that they're cures. I'm pretty sure you're not going to kind of claim that we have a cure for anything that we're talking about today, but trials ongoing. Where do you land on where we're at as far as therapeutics at this point?
Well, it's exciting. I think we're making a lot of progress. The first one was, of course, remdesivir. I think where we clearly have evidence from controlled clinical trials that it provides a benefit. If used in the right patient population, just as someone's starting to have difficulty with oxygenating their blood, and it's instituted early, it actually has a mortality advantage. If it's instituted later, once you're in the intensive care unit, potentially going on a ventilator, it doesn't have a mortality advantage, but it does allow you to get out of the hospital about 3 days earlier. It's an important advance. Remember, this was a drug that was previously developed for Ebola. It does have a role. We now also know that steroids in individuals with advanced disease on a ventilator, if used properly, can actually have a mortality advantage. There's two other areas of research right now that show great promise. One is the idea of using the antibodies from people who've recovered from COVID, using their plasma with the antibodies and giving that to individuals. There's a large trial in over 30,000 people that's being analyzed as we speak by the FDA. We'll wait to see what those results are. But there's a real possibility that there will be a positive effect on specific antibodies. And finally, the Health and Human Services just awarded almost a little over $400 million to a company called Regeneron that is actually making these antibodies synthetically, monoclonal antibodies. And those clinical trials are also starting now. So I think we're going to continue to see substantial improvement in the therapeutic options. Basically, as we get into September, October, I'm very, very hopeful that this antibody therapy, particularly the monoclonal antibody therapy, will provide a therapeutic advantage to individuals that find themselves sick enough to have to go into a hospital. And it's conceptual that antibody will also have a prophylactic effect while we wait for the vaccine, or you could actually administer it to high-risk individuals like in nursing homes or high-risk healthcare professionals that have a risk of acquisition. So, again, I think the innovation that science is bringing to this is exciting, but it's not more important than the simple, purposeful action that I ask each American to take, and that is to become part of the solution, embrace face masks, embrace social distancing, embrace aggressive hand hygiene, and be smart about the gatherings that you're in and limit those gatherings to be with other individuals that are practicing face masks and good hand hygiene and social distancing. That's our most powerful tool. That's really could bring this outbreak down. That could have your state of Oklahoma really turn the tide. You're clearly in an upward trend right now. If every Oklahoman would embrace that face mask and social distancing, hand washing, and smartness about gatherings, particularly as relates to bars and crowded restaurants, I think we'll see this outbreak get progressively under control.
Okay, and real quick, you didn't mention hydroxychloroquine. Have you seen anything that indicates that it's, effective, are you concerned that people are taking it unnecessarily?
Well, as a physician, and I am a physician, yes. It's very frequent that we physicians look for drugs that are approved for another indication and consider using them in consultation with our patient when we don't have obvious treatment options. I think there's now been a number of really good controlled clinical trials, a majority of which have not shown benefit from hydroxychloroquine. There's a single trial out of Detroit that has some complications with it that suggested there may be, but they have some confounders. So I think at this point, we have not seen any compelling evidence. That said, I think it's still, ultimately a decision between a physician and a patient whether they choose to try some of these off-label indications based on their own situation.
Well, doctor, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you, and I know I've gone way over my time, so I'll ask if there's anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up.
No, I think the most important thing, Russell, that I want to emphasize is that we're going to get we're going to get through this a lot faster and a lot more successful if we all come together. And what I want us to come together around is those very simple but very powerful weapons we have of, you know, wearing a face mask, social distancing, washing your hands, being smart about crowds, closing or limiting bars so there's no crowding, and obviously restaurants. We do those things together as we reopen our schools so our K through 12s can get back and have the public health benefit they need from in-face learning. We need to do it safely and sensibly, but I'm confident if we put our minds to do it, we can do that. And if we all do this together as we continue to reopen our economy, I think we will see within 4, 6, 8, 10, 12 weeks, we can see this outbreak get under control, so that we can ensure that we maintain the schools open and we maintain our retail and businesses open and we begin a path to getting back to life as we once knew it, as we see the advent, I think, of the benefit of the innovation that science is going to bring to the table and improve therapies. And as I said, I think there is a real possibility that we'll have one or more efficacious and safe vaccines available before the first of the year.
From your lips to God's ears, sir, it sounds like we've got armies marching towards the enemy on several fronts. So thank you again for your time. Dr. Robert Redfield, he is our director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the administrator of the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. Great credentials and a nice guy and very, very generous with his time. So thank you very much, sir.
Yep. God bless, Russell.
And you, sir. And bye-bye. Stay safe. Bye-bye.